Welcome to Hooked on Fly Fishing. I'm Colin Shepherd, and it's Friday, the 16th of November. Hooked on Fly Fishing is proudly supported by Rod and Reel Newmarket. They have the biggest range of fly fishing and fly tying gear in New Zealand. Now, the staff at Rod and Reel will help you choose that gear, and more importantly, they will show you how to use it. Have a look at their website, rodandreel.co.nz. Now, on tonight's show, we have some fly fishing news. Met Service has provided us with accurate weather forecasts. We check out some river flows and levels with Waikato Regional Council, Bay of Plenty Regional Council, and Genesis Energy. We have Andrew Pering in studio, and Andrew will tell us about saltwater fly fishing in Western Australia. And later on here, we will have Jimmy Laverty from Fly Odyssey Australia. And if we've got time, we'll finish with the fly fishing quote of the week. Let's look at some fly fishing news. The moon phases. The next full moon will be on the 25th of this month. A full moon occurs when the apparent longitudes of the moon and sun differ by 180 degrees. At this time, 100% of the moon's visible surface is illuminated. What does it mean? Well, around the time of the full moon, fish are sluggish and less likely to strike at your choice of fly. You still go fishing, of course you do. You just put in more time and effort. Remember the saying, new moon, fisherman's favourite. Full moon, fisherman's folly. The latest edition of Reel Life is out. Reel Life is the official monthly newsletter from Fish and Game New Zealand. You can keep up to date with all the freshwater fishing action, news, events and comment from across New Zealand. It is free and it is sent to your inbox. How good is that? It's easy to do. Just go to the Fish and Game website, fishandgame.org.nz, to sign up. The Hooked on Fly Fishing radio show is on the internet. This means you can listen at a time that suits you. Just go to the website planetaudio.org.nz/hookedonflyfishing. There are also archived interviews with fishing experts. If you have any news about upcoming fly fishing events, fishing reports, or any comment about fly fishing in general, you can contact me by emailing me, Colin, on col.pamatextra.co.nz. That's col.pam@xtra.co.nz. Now, let's look at some weather with Met Service. The Auckland Marine Forecast. I'm going out in my boat tomorrow, looking forward to it. The situation. A ridge lies over the area today and Saturday, then a front crosses the area from south late Sunday, followed by southerlies. The front clears the area on Monday, but a trough remains in place over the country. Forecast for Manukau Harbour Saturday, variable 5 knots, southwest 10 knots developing in the afternoon, turning northeast 10 knots in the evening. Sea slight, mainly fine, chance of afternoon showers. Waitemata Harbour for Saturday, variable 5 knots. Northeast 10 knots developing for a time in the afternoon and early evening. Sea slight, mainly fine, afternoon showers. The outlook for Sunday, both harbours, northerly 15 knots developing, cloudy periods and isolated showers. Met Service Waikato, Saturday, mainly fine but isolated afternoon showers inland, light winds. Sunday in the Waikato, partly cloudy, a shower or two developing in the morning, then rain at night. Rotorua, good evening anglers down there, your forecast for Saturday. Fine apart from isolated afternoon showers, light winds. Sunday in Rotorua is going to be partly cloudy, a few showers from afternoon, northerly breezes. Met Service Taupo and Taumanui have the same forecast, Saturday. Areas of morning cloud, then fine apart from isolated afternoon showers, light winds. Taupo and Taumanui on Sunday, partly cloudy, a few showers developing in the morning, then rain at night. For our South Island listeners in the Canterbury Plains region, your forecast for Saturday, scattered early morning rain, then mainly fine with isolated showers. However, areas of low cloud about the coast, north-easterlies. Sunday on the Canterbury Plains, cloudy periods and a few showers, especially about the foothills. Thanks to Met Service for those reports. We do appreciate that. Let's look at some river levels. The Puniu River is 23 kilometres south of Te Awamutu and is currently at 8.03 metres and falling. It's flowing at 6.2 cubic metres per second. That's well down on last week. The next river over, the Mangatutu, is at 1.1 metres. It's flowing at 1.4 cubic metres per second. It's low and clear. The Ohinamuri River, measured at Karangahake between Pauroa and Waihi, is currently at 11.8 metres and falling. It's flowing at 4 cubics. It's in good condition. The Tauranga Taupo River at the southern end of Lake Taupo is at 0.25 of a metre. It's also down on last week. The Waipa River, measured at Otiwa, is 75.5 metres. It's falling. It's flowing at 3.6 cubics and falling, ideal and in good condition. The Nongataha River, and remember that above State Highway 5 is closed till 1 December, is currently at 0.75 cubics. It's well down on last week. It's starting to drop and clear. The Whakapapa is at 3.2 cubics. It's down from a high of 15 4 days ago. And the Whanganui River, measured at Piriaka, is at 14.6 cubic metres per second, down from a high of 31. And the Tongariro, measured at Turangi, is at 22.8 cubics, down from 26 a couple of days ago. Met Service say a fine weekend with occasional showers in some places. These rivers will continue to drop and clear. Enjoy the fishing. But as always, you need to be very careful when wading. Now, thanks to Waikato Regional Council, Bay of Plenty Regional Council, and Genesis Energy for that information. We do appreciate it. Real-time monitoring, excellent websites. Thank you for that. Now we'll have a very quick break and then we'll talk to Andrew Perrin.
You look a little dressed up. You're acting way too smart. Your face a little bit blurred. Clutching your phone as you walk in the door, and your smile's got a twist. You're looking so hardcore. If you're something to see, don't be too direct, 'cause I feel a little fragile. Don't hit the nail on the head. There's a swish in your step. There's a gleam in your eye.
Listen to Hooked on Fly Fishing on Planet FM. Rolling Stones from the album A Bigger Bang. Andrew Perrin is a very experienced angler. And Andrew has fished all around the world. He's chased fish in Argentina, Australia, the USA, Canada, Kiribati, Samoa, Fiji, New Caledonia and Vanuatu. His latest trip was to Exmouth, Western Australia, and Andrew is in studio tonight with us. Good evening, Andrew.
Good evening, Colin.
How you all?
Doing very good.
Very good. Now, this last trip, Exmouth, Western Australia, what was the target species?
Billfish on the fly was number one, and number two was queenfish on the flats.
Okay. Did they get bonefish on the flats there as well?
Yes, the Exmouth area bone fishery was discovered by Brett Wolfe about 10, 15 years ago and is world renowned for bonefish over 10 pounds.
Okay. Do you get a mixture of flats wading, boat fishing?
Yes, you can go wading if you don't mind the tiger sharks.
Well, I do mind tigers. So it can be done, but not advisable?
No, you'd be looking over your back and left and right all the time. So it's mainly off the front of the boat, which is how I prefer it, yeah.
I understand. Okay. Now, what sort of gear do you need for these sort of trips, Andrew?
You're looking for big fish. These are really big fish and strong fish. So an 8-weight may do it, but it's pretty much going to be too light. So your starting weight should be 10s, and a 12-weight is a good backup for something we were bigger. Some of the big GTs and cobia, sailfish, black marlin, 12 to 14-weight, you know.
Okay, that's heavy-duty stuff. And obviously you've got to have the reels to match it.
Yeah, definitely. You want to make sure that your backing's right, your knots, your connections are right, and even your line configurations are right to the style of fishing, especially for the billfish on fly. It's quite technical, and if you're not set up well, then the gentleman that I went with out there, Eddie Lawler, is set up perfectly for it.
Okay, so you use professional guides to make sure all these things are sorted out.
Yeah, there's a number of guides there who can take you fly fishing for billfish, and you can use your own gear, but Eddie is the sole guy set up with the right teasers, the right switch gear, and the number of deckhands on board to make the process a good team, seamless team event, and his range of rods and reels from 10kg records, 6kg records, and up to bigger, heavier gear, you know, 14, 16 weights is the best on the planet.
Okay, you talked about deckhands. Are these like big boats, like 30-foot long launches type of thing, so set up for game fishing?
So when you're going over there and you're looking for the billfish on the fly, you could possibly do it with some of the guys who are providing the flat fishing service on their smaller boats. Boats similar to what Matt has over at Waiheke are used on the flats.
Set of consoles. With a casting
platform
at the front, yes.
Yep. And they're catching black marlin and sailfish on similar setups to what Matt's got over there. And that's an economical way to fish, if you call it economical. And the bigger boats, the 30 to 40 foot boats, they're a different setup again, but they provide a lot more clear water out the back for a good switch to get your billfish onto the fly. So when we did our billfishing, we chose to go on a bigger boat, and Eddie is the best set up in Australia, and he's probably one of the best in the world right now on peak sport fishing for fly fishing for billfish. Yeah,
very good. Eddie Lawler, there's a name to remember. You're talking about switch fishing. Can you tell us about that? You're using teasers to attract them to the back of the boat, right?
Yeah, so you've got a short corner, long corner, and usually a skirt with a very small 2-pound queenfish. In there, and then you'll have a dredge, and then you'll have a teaser with a lure on that with a queenfish as well. So if the fish comes in on one of the short corners, long corners, what you're trying to do is switch the fish onto the long corner, which is on the facing from the front to the back of the boat, rear of the boat, on the left-hand side. So the angler's casting from the right-hand corner and then casting across to the lure that's taken out of the water. So Eddie has just an incredible setup. He'll sit up there on the fly bridge. He'll see all the fish action below him. He's got two electric reels, which he pushes the switch, and his teasers come in on those while he's controlling the boat and keeping the fish interested. And then one of the deckhands will remove the long corner, and then one of the other deckhands will have his switch pole where he's bringing the fish onto the switch pole. And he's keeping the fish excited, keeping it lit up. And he will then, under Eddie's instructions of out of gear, cast, in a really sort of a brash Australian accent, if I can do that, Eddie. and then it's a matter of getting in sync with Eddie and making that cast to your billfish. And they all tend to just curve off to the right, out of casting reach. So your timing has to be spot on with Eddie and Wes's boat work.
Okay, so you're in the corner waiting for the call out of gear. You've already stripped all your line off the reel. You've got to have all that ready. You make sure you're not standing on the bloody thing. It doesn't get caught around a bollard or a cleat or something.
So when you head out on day one, Eddie does a trial run through everything, how his crew and everything works on his boat. He'll get Wes's deckhand to just run through the switch and his timing, and Eddie will also do his timing of seeing the fish. So he'll call it, there's a fish in the gear, and then he's a brash Australian accent, and a gear cast, and you make your cast, and the fish will just come up on those lures all lit up, and you know, you got to get it right. Your timing has to be right for them to actually then move from that teaser onto the fly, and it's, you have to have a lot of shots before everything comes together, and it's not something that just comes together straight away. And for those who has, I admire them for their catches. It's just incredible. And for others, they have to wait a long time.
Okay, but that's fishing.
It's fishing. Yeah, it's the challenge. It's beautiful, and the mad keen fisherman over there. Dean, forget Dean's afternoon. Some of these guys are doing this saltwater fly, so hooked on it, so everything just revolves around saltwater fly fishing for large billfish.
Okay.
And you can see why. You know, one of the things is you're not holding a bonefish or a permit in your hands. They're going for this because these are big fish that if once you got on the side of the boat and you want to take your fly out and they take a swat at you, they'll kill you.
It's dangerous work.
It is. So there's a real thrill in it for these guys who are doing it all the time.
Okay, I understand.
And it's exciting. I mean, it's a boat ride for 90% of the day. But when a fish comes in and everything's going, it's just the most exciting fishing, it really is.
Okay. You hooked a sailfish?
Yep, managed to get a sailfish. Eddie from Peak, an incredible guy. He's world renowned now. He's basically regarded as the best. We fish from sun up to sundown. There's no going home at 4:30 so he can have dinner with his family. It was 10 minutes from sundown. You just saw the smallest pop up of the bill. And I'd never left my right hand corner where I have my rod set up. So I have the line stripped from the reel, the fly sitting. On the right-hand corner, so I just pick that up, and I'm ready to go as soon as Eddie calls cast, and then away we go. And one of the real impressive things about Eddie is that we caught this fish, took our photos, sun was setting over the Ningaloo Reef in Exmouth, Western Australia, and land this fish, and Eddie then goes and grabs the 10 kg gear, and goes, "We're gonna catch another one." He didn't give up. 5 minutes before darkness, Eddie wanted to catch another one.
Okay.
So that's the sort of guy you're fishing with. It's incredible.
But yeah, he's working for you, his client, and he's giving it the best shot he can give. Every day.
Yeah, and he is so madly in love with the sport that when you sit on there, he's just the pride that he puts into his company and his business, and how he wants to make people's dreams come true. He's a brilliant man.
Well done. Now, other you say queenfish there, and giant trevally, tuna.
Yeah, the tuna species, the queenies. So Australia's probably known for its species, and Australians want to go species hunting. And Exmouth, Western Australia is the place really on the planet to catch a lot of species and a lot of big fish. So you have a range of tuna species from long tail tuna, a few yellowfin come through. You also have permit. It's a great permit fishery.
Permit, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and it's probably one of the best permit fisheries in the world. It also has a bone fishery there, the only bone fishery really in Australia. And the fish there up to about 10 pound. And one of the things that Brett Wolf from Ningaloo Fly Fishing taught me is the Ningaloo Reef bonefish jump.
Do they?
And they'll go right into the air. So more like a trout than a bonefish.
Yeah.
GTs, a lot of GTs in that 30 to 50 pound, but they also get a lot in the 80 to 100 pound mark. And then you've got brassies. Golden trevallies is their mainstay. Golden trevallies will just smash everything. You got a wee bit of barramundi there, herring there, and the main fly fish species that people target in Australia is the queenfish, and that's what I went for.
Okay.
And that was something I'd been dreaming about since my previous trip there in 95 was to actually fly fish for queenfish and catch a big queenfish on the flats. And Brett took us to a spot, a remote part of the eastern side of the Gulf of Exmouth. And we probably came across schools of 100 plus fish.
Goodness me.
And the biggest one of that day was 20 pound. And yeah, it really is. The strength of them and their acrobatics, they are just sensational.
Now, what about water temperatures? Nice and warm, I'd imagine.
We went in the end of September, so it was just coming out of winter, just starting to warm up, so that every day the air temperature and the sea temperature was getting warmer, and that kind of hit our favour. If we'd been a week earlier, things would have been slower. 2 weeks after we went there, I think the air temperature was 10 degrees higher, and then a month later it was 20 degrees higher, and it's now 39 degrees instead of 27. Mm-hmm. So 27 for us is beautiful. For them, it's freezing cold, and they've got their jackets on. You walk out of East Australia and everyone's freezing cold.
Oh, yeah.
The water was still about 20 degrees, okay. And it warmed up 2 degrees in the space of a week when we were there. That's inside the reef, but outside the reef, in the blue water, the temperature was at 25.
Gosh.
And that will go to 28. But the cold breeze off the deserts, Australian deserts, are what cools the air temperature down. When that blows across the Gulf, and that's what can shut the fishery down. So I believe if you want to go there, you really want to get there no earlier than when we went end of September, sort of start of August, and then through to sort of end of May.
Okay, so let's say October through to May would be ideal.
Oh, this month, one of the boats there caught, I think it was 130 or 180 sailfish in the last 20 days or 10 days. It's just crazy numbers. It's huge, huge numbers. They're getting sort of 5 to 8 to 10, depending on the day, sailfish, and they're hooking up on just about every fish, yeah.
But that number of sailfish, that's much better than rompin in Malaysia.
I actually looked at the rompin stats of some of the guys on these particular weeks, and yeah, they're catching more sales right now out of Exmouth. Okay. And I fished up with Chris up at Broome, and he has a good season from August September, but even his numbers are still well down on Exmouth numbers. Nothing comes close to Exmouth.
Okay. Yeah. Is it expensive, Andrew? Let's talk about the cost.
So there's a number of ways you can do this trip. You can travel there with another fishing mate, and you can charter someone like Brett Wolf from Ningaloo Fly Fishing, and you're looking around $2,500 for the week. So the week packages, you've got 7 days with them, and you fish the 5 best weather days, and that's $2,500 each. So that's comparable to some of the other entry-level prices like Christmas Island and the Will. You got a range of accommodation there, which is extra from cheap to nice, and there's some really nice places there. And the airfare up there is similar to going to Christmas Island.
Yeah.
So it's a couple of grand, so it's not too bad an airfare. But I travel with my wife, so we look for lovely accommodation with the pool, you know, nice restaurant, so she's happy all the time, and she'll come out and fish a bit. And the advantage with Eddie, he has a beautiful boat to take your non-fishing partner with. And then on my days fishing with Brett on a smaller boat, we went one day inside the Ningaloo Reef. It wasn't really where I wanted to fish when I booked, but I'm so glad that he took me there and shared his part of the world. He discovered that fishery, and it was like someone showing you the secret spot.
Okay, yes.
And it was so gorgeous. If you've ever seen the Indian Ocean, you'll know what I'm talking about. The clarity, the colour of the water.
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's why everyone goes to the Seychelles.
Yeah.
But you don't actually need to go to the Seychelles. You just got to go to Exmouth and you're fishing the Indian Ocean.
Yeah.
But for the same range of fish and the same size, but with very professional guides.
Yeah, I understand.
And with great accommodation, you're not roughing it, so your non-fishing partner can go with you. You can go there with a mate and get a great price, a third of the cost of Seychelles, and you can catch some incredible species.
Okay. How do you... talking about flats wading, I've always been a bit scared after I fished Harvey Bay. I've seen a number of sharks in the bloody water.
Mm.
Do you get a problem with sharks in your flats? Do you get scared or do you see many of them?
So there's two places that we can fish at Exmouth. There's the western side of the Gulf and the eastern side of the Gulf. The western side of the Gulf is protected by the Ningaloo Reef, and the Ningaloo Reef is the equivalent to the Great Barrier, but I think it's even nicer, the clarity of the water, and it's not commercial, and you haven't had the damage to the reef. It's one of those parts on the planet that is special. So when you go there, you really need a boat. It's over your head. You're fishing with slow sinking lines, heavy flies. One of the hammerheads we saw that came around the boat that day, and they'll be outside the reef, and when you've got a bonefish on,
they'll come in that reef when you're playing.
Oh, okay.
And you don't want to go in the... It just teaches you, you don't want to go in the water. Those sharks are there, and they're only 2 minutes away.
Yeah.
And they pick up the vibrations. Vibration. And it's an incredible... And look, this hammerhead. How big do hammerheads get? That's how big this was.
Yeah,
It was full size. Mm. And then if you go over to the eastern side, it's quite similar in size and structure to our Hauraki Gulf, where you've got a whole lot of small streams flowing in, similar to Thames, and that's where your crab permit and queen fishing is. Now, in there, you've got a lot of tiger sharks, and the water's slightly murkier. It's still clear enough, you can see, you know,
that's
fish.
That's because of the tides coming in and out, the streams, and stirring the bottom up.
Stirring the bottom up. Still visibility, but it's not like the fish pond of Ningaloo Reef. Ningaloo Reef is just like... You've got to go there. It is the most sensational place you'll fish. And I'll compare it to Christmas Island because a lot of listeners will know what that's like.
Yes.
Christmas Island's got nothing over Ningaloo Reef. The clarity is just another step up in the Indian Ocean, and that white bottom. You can see milkfish actually milking, the dust coming up from a long way. You're not looking for an individual fish. You're looking for that whole milking thing. You're looking for the stingrays flapping the the bottom. And then the big golden trevally, the 20 to 60 pound golden trevally in massive schools in behind the stingies.
Okay. Do they follow, like the kingfish do, the ray riders type of thing? Picking up what the stingrays are just doing.
It's exactly the same.
Okay. And you can see it all. It's all highly visual.
Oh, you can see it from so far away, and it's incredible when you're looking like way down the bay and you're seeing, oh, there's something down there that you can see the colour change in the water, or you can see the ripple on the water, and it's just something incredible.
Okay, what sort of flies were you using for sailfish and stuff?
So for sailfish, you're using quite a big feathered lure, and Eddie had a few of his own sort of like concoctions there. Mainly feathered. He finds the synthetics just stick to the bill too much on the fish, which is really interesting.
Yeah, okay. I wouldn't have thought of that, but
He's got a box of 1,000 synthetics, and they will go back to the corner. He brings out his feathers. So, that's one thing I learned. Some of his patterns are more individual to his sort of like success that he's had there, as compared to some of the more famous patterns. It's full on. I mean, they're there to catch blue marlin. Black marlin, as well as the sailfish, so they're a generic sort of like pattern that he prefers. Yeah.
Okay. Did you take all your own gear, Andrew, or did you use all the guide stuff?
So on the flats, I took 8 weights, 10s, and 12s, and out with Eddie chasing the billfish, he had a huge range of gear. So 12 weights, he was down to 10 kg set up. He will switch that down to 6 kg for people looking who like the record hunting thing, and then he'll have heavier gear up to 14 and 16 weights as well, with some pretty serious reels, beautiful half and reels. But I think must have been custom made for, because I haven't seen anything on the net where you've actually got a little dial that you move around and set your drag.
Oh, yeah.
And you can set it to 10 kg, 12 kg.
So it's on the edge of the reel, not in the middle.
It's in the middle, but it's like a... You have a little knob in the middle, and this arm comes out, and you just move this little arm like on a clock face.
Yeah.
And you move that around, and you set it to the weight. So then it's all preset. So it's depending on the tippet weight you're fishing with, you can get everything very accurate. And you hear a lot of guys who have issues with reels blowing up or getting it right or hook straightening or tippet breaking. But it's all pretty precision, and it's pretty much, you know, we set it on that western Eddie's way. We set it on this way, and it won't break, and you can fish 6 kg.
Okay. Yeah.
So
that's the experience of the man.
Oh, it's just brilliant. Everything's dialed in. There's no mistakes. There's no second guessing it. Everything's perfect.
Okay, I understand. How do you rate the Exmouth? You've been all around the world, as we said. Last year we had you in this same studio talking about sturgeon fishing. How do you rate the Exmouth? Right up there?
Yeah, my first look at it was 1995 and the Indian Ocean, and I don't think there's much or any ocean as nice as the Indian Ocean. But one of the things that draws me of Exmouth itself is the personality of the people. They're very adventurous, and when you go there as a tourist, it's not like all the government legislation in place controlling your activity and making you feel like you're in a cotton ball room and you can't breathe without getting permission. And basically you go up there with adventurous people doing hardcore stuff, and you get on the boat with Brett, and it's pretty much, here's our, oh, you know what you do, you don't need a safety brief, and where's your jacket? You're going to get freezing cold. You didn't put a jacket. It's cold this morning. But, you know, it's 27 degrees. So they give you shit from the beginning. You feel like your family.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. And they're just brilliant people. I just like that adventure nature, and they haven't been controlled. And they just really, it's just fantastic. And the roads don't have a lot of people on them. We sat at a beach. My wife and I sat at a beach one day along the Ningaloo coast. And we had a couple from Germany join us, but basically we were the only ones there.
That's amazing, isn't it?
That's fantastic. Yeah. And the white beaches, the clear water, you can see for miles. You could sit there with your rod, with your girlfriend, and just, oh, I'm enjoying my day with your darling, and you could just be scanning the oceans for bonefish and queenfish all day long while sunbathing, and then, got to leave, you know, tear up the road and, you know, catch a queenie coming through. And that's what a lot of guys do. They do a bit of DIY and they walk the east and the western coasts.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to stop someone going over the DIY fishing and walking and having a really good week or two and exploring somewhere different every day.
That, I just brought up another question. I've just thought, do you need a saltwater fly license or a saltwater license? It's like here, anyone can go out in the salt?
Just go out,
yeah. Just do it.
Yeah.
Okay, I like that. Just go and do it.
Yeah, and that's pretty much Western Australia. Just go and do it. And, and that's what makes it so good. The town of Exmouth is really basic. If it wasn't for the whale shark watching in winter and the whales, the huge number of whales that come through and the tourism that comes there, it would be possibly another Western Australia mining town.
Yeah.
But it's simple. The accommodation's great. It's in a dust bowl desert, you know, of Australia. But it's a real sweet town, and I thought my wife went there that it was going to be a bit hardcore for her. She loved it. She wants to go back, and she just wants to sit on the beach with no one around and enjoy life.
Excellent. Now, how did you arrange all this trip? How did you get onto it? Did you do it yourself, or did you use the company?
So, past experience teaches me it's a bit hit and miss sometimes going on the internet and finding a good operator. And I used Jimmy Laverty from Fly Odyssey in Australia. They've got the head office in the UK, and I asked Jimmy to organise my fishing with on the flats, and I asked him for accommodation and flights. I was doing that in my room on my computer. My wife was down on her computer. Oh, look, I found this nice accommodation, honey, and she's there booking that, and I'm asking Jimmy. So I ended up sticking with the fishing with Jimmy just to make sure that when I turned up, the guide was dialed in what I wanted. So for me, traveling and fishing, I'm over the top OCD, whatever they call it, and I want to make sure when I go there it's the most exceptional service and the most exceptional fishing that I get, and I want the guide to be dialed in knowing that this is my thing. And I found that Brett had done that, and I found that Jimmy had corresponded that well to Brett. I didn't communicate with Brett because I didn't want to do that. I wanted to make sure I stuck with Jimmy and made it very professional.
Okay, well, let's have a quick break, and we'll see if we can get Jimmy on the line.
Okay, oh, cool.
A little bit from his end, all right? Okay, we'll have a very quick break, and then we'll be back.
Preacher on the corner ranting like a crazy man. He says that trouble's a-coming. I can read it like the back of my hand.
You're hooked on fly fishing on Planet FM 104.6. Now, Fly Odyssey is a worldwide fly fishing travel agency based in Melbourne and also in the UK. They provide expert guidance and tailored fly fishing holidays to a diverse portfolio of destinations all around the world. James Laverty is a travel director at Fly Odyssey Australia, and he's based in Ballarat, and James has been fly fishing throughout Australia and indeed around the world since first picking up a fly rod and learning the craft in Scotland more than 20 years ago. Recently, James became an accredited travel agent through the Australian Travel Accreditation Scheme, and he launched Fly Odyssey Australia in 2015 with his partner in the UK, Matt McHugh. This now sees James sending clients on tailored fly fishing holidays, while also regularly guiding and hosting group trips each year to locations such as French Polynesia, Arnhem Land, Kiribati, New Caledonia, and the Cook Islands. James is live on air with us now. Good evening, James.
Good evening, Colin. How are you?
Very good, thank you. We have in studio Andrew Pearing, who Andrew booked a trip with you to Exmouth, Western Australia, a couple of months ago.
Yes. Hi, Andrew.
G'day. How you going?
Yeah, well, yourself?
Good, good.
Now, James, what's involved in setting up a fly fishing trip away?
That's a good question, Colin. We get a lot of people come to us, I suppose, first and foremost, looking for ideas on where they can go. Typically, the winter months are very popular for clients in New Zealand and in Australia. And really it comes down to exactly, you know, what they want out of their holiday. A lot of clients are travelling with their partner, so you know, we certainly have a lot of destinations that suit non-fishing anglers as well as fly fishermen. So really combining the two is something that we focus on. And, of course, we've got groups of guys and corporate groups and things like that travelling all over the world throughout the year. So, yeah, really it's around looking at availability, looking about times of the year when you can actually get away from work and go and enjoy a holiday somewhere. And, the rest is sort of down to us in terms of looking at logistics and flights and things like that, just to try and put it all together so you can plan ahead and, start preparing for your holiday.
I understand totally. Well done. Now, I presume as a travel agent and fly fishing stuff, you have long-term relationships with guides, fishing lodges, airlines and stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think as you mentioned in the introduction, Fly Odyssey Australia, we've been operating since 2015, and I suppose we're fortunate that Fly Odyssey in the UK has been around for around 12 years now. So, certainly over that period of time, we've been able to form really good relationships with different lodges and guides around the world, work out who we should be dealing with, who perhaps not to be dealing with, and, really refine that list for our clients so that we know when we're sending people away that we're sending them to reputable places and that they're going to get looked after and have a great trip.
And that's the reason I contacted Jimmy, because of past experiences that didn't go well. Just wanted to make sure we're dealing with the right person, not the wrong person, and that you had, I suppose, communicated with that guide. My expectations were to be exceedingly high and I was going to be quite demanding. And I believe that was pulled off by everybody, and we achieved the goals with all our fishing up there, which was brilliant.
Yeah, Andrew mentioned Eddie Lawler and Brett Wolf. He was very pleased with the work that they did for him.
Yeah, two really good guides. Yeah. I mean, Brett Wolf was instrumental in pioneering the fly fishing scene really in Exmouth quite a while back. He discovered the bonefish fishery on the inshore reef there and sort of, it's really expanded to the point where you've got guys like Eddie Lawler and a range of other guys doing sport fishing for marlin. I mean, it's a fantastic billfish fishery. You've got all species really there that you can target. So certainly the opportunity to chase marlin on fly. You've got black marlin, striped marlin, you've got your blue marlin, sailfish. It's a wonderful place, and those two guys in particular are very professional and wear their heart on their sleeve, and they go that extra mile for their clients, which is what we're looking for as a partner.
Well, that's right. Andrew said he had a fabulous time, and yes, they did work very hard for him. Now, part of your job also, Jimmy, is finding new destinations. I believe you've been recently up French Polynesia or somewhere?
Yeah, that's right.
Tell us about that.
We had a busy month there. I was there in early October with a group of clients, and then more recently, about a week and a half ago, we returned from a filming trip with some partners from the UK and the US. So, yeah, there's a little island off Tahiti called Ana Atoll. We've been, it's a bit of a story to it, which I could probably go through with you this evening. But, yeah, we've been going there since 2015. And, yeah, fly fishermen in general, we're always looking for somewhere new and something different, something untouched. And, yeah, Ana's a magnificent place. It's, I suppose if I go back to why we first went to Ana in 2015, we'd done a lot of research, fisheries research on bonefish and giant trevally on one of the neighbouring islands called Tetiaroa, which is near Bora Bora, just north of Tahiti.
Yes.
And myself and Matt from Fly Odyssey, we've both got a fisheries science background, so we're sort of into that as well as our fishing. And, yeah, through the work we'd done on Tetiaroa, we were invited to Ana in 2015. And essentially we were asked to go there because they have a declining population on the island and a youth retention issue. So I suppose one of the main objectives was to go there and assess the fishery, check it out and work out whether there was any potential for us to help them develop an ecotourism opportunity around fly fishing. And yeah, the early days were interesting. I suppose the locals really didn't understand the concept of capturing a fish on a fly rod and then releasing it. So it's really been a bit of a journey. But for us, we didn't really want to just start sending clients there straight away. We really wanted to understand the fishery, and we invested over the last 3.5 years. We've had a fishery scientist there who's done a fantastic job just to help us understand the fishery and find out whether we can, develop its full potential for years to come. So,
Is it going to go ahead? Will the ordinary person be able to go there shortly?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an amazing place. I suppose I'm fortunate, Colin, to travel all over the world and throughout the Pacific, and Ana's certainly the most stunning atoll I've ever been to. It's well set up now. Through the work that we've done there over the last 3.5 years, we've sort of shown the community that the bonefish fishery, and for your listeners out there, bonefish is probably one of the top three saltwater species, Andrew, I would say, in the world that the clients travel around the world to target. It's an amazing fish, and Ana certainly has a really good population of bonefish there.
But what you've got happening over around the world now is you've got, because April Vokey travelled to fish with Eddie the week after me, Jeff Curry and a few others around the world. And what's the guy Dean, who's the Aussie mate over there, is a hardcore saltwater fly fisherman?
Dean Butler, yeah.
Yeah, Dean Butler. I mean, those guys are just pushing this game fishing thing pretty hard too, aren't they? That's the next step up, is a fish you can't hold in both hands, like a bonefish.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, I suppose, on the saltwater side of things, you've got guys who want to do sight fishing on the flats, walking the flats and stalking fish like bonefish and bluefin trevally and triggerfish and things like that. And then certainly the blue water side of things is pretty exhilarating. You're stepping up from using 8-weight rods. Most of your listeners are probably familiar with 5 and 6 weights on the trout. We're sort of 8-weight rods on bonefish up to, once you start targeting marlin and sailfish, you're sort of up in that 12, 14, 15, 16 weight sort of calibre of sport fishing. So it's pretty exhilarating.
There's a lot of exciting stuff out there, isn't there?
Hold on, James. We've just got to start wrapping it up now. We've got 24 seconds to go. Thank you for being on Hooked on Fly Fishing. We do appreciate it. Can you give us your contact details? Have you got a website or anything, James?
Yeah, sure, Colin. We're opening up anglers to go to Ana Atoll next year from September to December. Inquiries at flyodyssey.com.au is probably the best